Okay, thank you. So, a perfect storm describes an event where a rare combination of circumstances, aggravate a situation so drastically that it results in an event of unusual magnitude. So the Ebola outbreak in West Africa was an event where all of these different circumstances came together to create a storm of unusual magnitude that is still going on, and that killed way too many people. So why was this the perfect storm? So, to begin with, the index case was from a part of the world where three countries met. It was where three countries met with extremely porous borders, a highly mobile population, and newly paved roads like this that for the first time had easy access out of these heavily forested area of this part of the world. The three countries were some of the poorest in the world, with some of the weakest health systems, endemic corruption, and also are pretty insignificant geopolitically. There were also three different colonial powers. The Brits, the American, and the French were all involved. And an international public health and humanitarian system that was totally ill-equipped to handle a public health an emergency like this. So, and in the first 6 months of the epidemic, the international confidence that Ebola outbreaks just naturally end by themselves was another accelerator of this storm. All other Ebola outbreaks had ended by themselves. Why would this be any different? No one listened to those of us who were on the ground when it was raining like this in West Africa, the summer of 2014, that it was only going to get worse. And then by the time the world did listen, they were too scared to come. All the airlines shut down, half of my expat colleagues left, and we were left, and also all of the seasoned kind of humanitarian workers, they were less scared of ISIS than they were of Ebola. So there was a small group of us that stayed in West Africa, and we were alone in the world to kind of handle the most complicated Ebola outbreak in history. Eventually, the international community did come, but they came only after the storm was in full speed. So this is a newspaper from Sierra Leone from May 27, 2014. That was the day after Ebola was confirmed in Sierra Leone. So Sierra Leoneans were asking the key question, how is this going to be managed? Because they knew the health system was really weak. So as was said, I was in Sierra Leone for 3 years before this happened. So a lot of the new expats who would come, they would ask me the same question. They would say, why wasn't the healthcare system strong enough to handle Ebola? Because there had been so much money that had been pumped in to the healthcare system after the end of the civil wars in Liberia and Sierra Leone. What I will always be confused by is that everyone was interested in why the health system wasn't strong enough. And just to let you know, the answer is because of poor governance in the health system. But few people, so people were interested in that, but nobody was really interested in how we could use the health system to stop Ebola. In the early days, we didn't have enough beds, and we didn't have enough trained and willing healthcare workers to deal with the daily increases in cases. It was pretty horrific. People died, lots of people in the same bed, covered in their own excrement. One of my Western colleagues said something in this beginning phase. He said, we need to make sure that we maintain the myth to Sierra Leoneans that if they seek treatment, their outcome is going to be better. Because as soon as the public realized that there was no better outcome if they stayed home to die versus if they went to the health facility to die, it was over. Then we lost it. So what he said was right. treatment for Ebola that is safe for healthcare workers and where patients receive quality, dignified care that increases their chances of survival is the cornerstone of the Ebola response. The problem is that it's just a lot more complicated than that. And there's a whole system that has to be supported to get a patient safely from their community to a treatment center and for nobody to be infected along that pathway. Additionally, it forgot the importance of the local people who had better knowledge of how to get a family and how to talk to a community about how to make those really difficult decisions to change behaviors to stop the chain of transmission. Oh, one sec. So, while everyone was focused on treatment beds, again, which was very important, but there was a small group of us that decided to focus on health system strengthening to prevent transmission. Since we didn't have a cluster system or any sort of UN body to coordinate us, we decided to coordinate ourselves to be able to support the Ministry of Health in the response. So we started what was called the Ebola Response Consortium. It started with these five NGOs in August 2014, and it grew to be 15 NGOs that it currently is. And we all worked together and coordinated ourselves as NGOs to support the Ministry of Health. Our first national scale program was to address the problem at the primary healthcare centers. So one of the main health messages in Sierra Leone was if you are sick, go to the health facility. The problem was, what happened if people went to the health facility? So we learned the hard way what happened. So in Kenema District, which was the first place that Ebola really had an outbreak in an urban area, we lost almost 70 healthcare workers by August 2014, just 10 weeks into the outbreak in Sierra Leone. By the end of August 2014, Sierra Leone lost over 300 healthcare workers. But they weren't from the treatment facilities. They were from, 77% of them were from the healthcare system, the normal healthcare system. So the Ebola response forgot about the importance of protecting healthcare workers along the full patient pathway that Ebola patient may cross on their way to finally receiving care. So as the International Rescue Committee before the consortium, the IRC worked with the Ministry of Health and WHO to pilot a training to protect healthcare workers, because as I said, we'd already lost 60 of them. So we trained them in infection prevention and control and screening for suspected Ebola cases. When we started the Ebola Response Consortium, one of our first priorities was protecting healthcare workers. But it was also about protecting the healthcare system to be able to continue to deliver maternal, newborn, and child health services within the context of Ebola. So the ERC worked with CDC, UNICEF, and the Ministry of Health to train over 4,000 healthcare workers and 3,000 support staff from every single primary healthcare facility in the country, which is 1,181, in just about 8 weeks. So they were trained on infection prevention and control, and most importantly, given the supplies that they needed to protect themselves. So in the US media, I was told by my mother that there was all of these stories that the health system collapsed. So just for the record, in Sierra Leone, it didn't. We had declining rates, we had declining kind of utilization of healthcare services, but 96% of the primary healthcare facilities in Sierra Leone stayed open during Ebola. And after we did this training, we lost very, very few healthcare workers. Difficult individual choices had to be made to break the chain of transmission of Ebola. One of my colleagues, his name is Abubakar Suleiman, he said it best. The problem with Ebola is that it spread through love. Four main modes of love. Love given to somebody who's died, to respect them. Love of taking care of a family member. Love of a healthcare worker taking care of their patient. And love through sexual transmission. I don't think there's anyone in this room who would not struggle with the individual decision to not practice whatever cultural burial practices your family has when your loved one dies. Or if you have a sick child, to not take care of that child when they're sick. Or if you're a nurse or a doctor, to not take care of that patient who comes into your clinic. I think what was never understood was just that the behavior changes that were needed to stop the chain of transmission of Ebola were so personal and so core to what makes us human beings that it just needed a totally different strategy than your typical social messaging campaign. Messaging around Ebola transmissions and risks was fundamentally flawed. Very quickly, people understood how Ebola was spread. But the issue was that they didn't trust the messengers often. The public didn't, and a lot of this was due to the fact that there had been a long pattern of corruption of the government. And there was just long failures of the government of the government and the aid system not delivering on promises that they said that they were going to deliver on. So rather than launch all these billboards, this is one from Liberia, it would have been a much more efficient use of resources to figure out who the public trusted and didn't trust, and then to support community engagement strategies based on that knowledge. It was essential, though, that this needed to be combined with efforts to gain trust in the public health system. We needed ambulances to come if the citizens called. We needed the three bodies on the street to actually be picked up in a reasonable amount of time instead of waiting there for 3 days. We needed mothers to feel safe to bring their child to the health facility. So in Sierra Leone and Liberia, the IRC worked on all of this. One example is in Sierra Leone, the IRC and other international NGOs had been working for almost 10 years with the Ministry of Health to support the development and institutionalization of the community health worker network. These were already, there was this huge network of volunteers that were integrated within the health system and were from the communities that they served. So we trained these volunteers in what was called community event-based surveillance. And we trained them to detect and to report 6 triggers that may be suspicious of Ebola. So triggers like 2 or more members of a family get sick and suddenly die. Somebody comes into your village as a stranger and suddenly dies in a strange, strange way, as they would say in Sierra Leone. So we trained over 7,000 of these community health workers throughout all the villages of Sierra Leone using this simple method to identify Ebola in their communities and be able to have the kind of the mechanisms in place for them to respond. So this is actually a view from my apartment in Freetown. It actually doesn't look as good here as it should, but it's sunset after a really, really long storm, a really bad storm. If anyone's been to West Africa, it rains really, really, really hard, but the sunsets are some of the most beautiful. So that's kind of where we are right now for the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. So on Saturday, Sierra Leone, hopefully, will be declared Ebola-free. Liberia has already been declared, and hopefully Guinea will follow. So the storm is almost over. So what have we learned? First, remember that healthcare workers should be the first priority in any communicable disease outbreak, especially Ebola. They are your frontline soldiers. Give them the training, materials, and ensure that they're paid and have the emotional support that they need for any future outbreak. Second, figure out what experts you need, find them, and listen to them. And most importantly, don't be racist when trying to figure out who your experts are. And don't limit it to technical experts. Find the cultural experts that are trusted by communities and know how to talk to people. Find your local public health experts who actually understand how to work in an incredibly complex system to get things done quickly and efficiently. And lastly, don't just look for technical fixes. Just have enough humility to accept that things are really, really complicated and there's never a silver bullet solution. By the time the world cared about people dying in West Africa, it was so out of control. And so the West focused on treatment because it was the thing that we as Westerners were best equipped to do. Everyone wanted a shortcut to the end of this outbreak. We did. Everyone wanted this to be over. But people needed to understand that the system had to be in place for communities to respond and to trust it. Most of the most important solutions we had were not high-tech and looked a lot like this. So this is our colleague and partner, Moussaka Falla, who worked in over 170 neighborhoods in Monrovia. So he just would go to, he's an a Western-trained epidemiologist, but who lived in Monrovia. So he went and was just, he would talk to communities, he would understand their concerns, he would listen to them, he would give them information, and then he would talk to them about how to implement just very simple, common sense actions that would stop Ebola in their communities. And then he worked with organizations like IRC, who have the operational capacity and the funding from donors to be able to implement changes that were needed in order to respond to Ebola. So we've been told that Ebola befell an ignorant, savage African population, and that the solution was white people putting together Ebola treatment centers. The reality is that Ebola grew in a complex political and social environment that was both domestically and internationally, and was marked by terrible governance within the countries that it happened in. However, it's been beaten back primarily by West Africans themselves. Primarily not through treatment, but by breaking through the layers of distrust in the system, and then by supporting those West Africans themselves that were working on the front line of the epidemic. Thanks.